From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
Yeah, it's the Pied Piper of R&B, y'all. Whoa.
If you were a fan of R&B music in the 90s, then R. Kelly was part of your soundtrack.
This is for y'all. Remix.
But if you followed R. Kelly, then you probably also knew about the allegations of sex abuse that have swirled around Kelly for the past 20 years, including a trial in which the Grammy winner was acquitted of child pornography charges. Now, a recently broadcast six-part documentary series has brought new sexual misconduct allegations about Kelly front and center and raised awareness nationally and in Philadelphia. And it's also raised the question, why has it taken so long for the voices of Black women and girls to be heard? Today's show, Black Women 2. Inquirer columnist Janice Armstrong has written about R. Kelly and came in to talk to us about him. Janice and I have been friends for many years now. We all call ourselves colleagues, even though I was at the Inquirer and she was at the Daily News. We were both columnists, and we've both written about R. Kelly, right, Janice?
Yes, we have.
I don't think any of my stuff ever got traction with people. You know, and that's the problem with R. Kelly, is that I don't think until this very moment we're in now that his alleged abuses have gotten any traction with anybody.
Not in a major way, not in a major way, though there were small boycotts.
Yeah.
I remember hearing over the summer about an incident at the National Association of Black Journalists convention when an R. Kelly song came on.
And everyone, what happened?
Everyone stopped. Legs froze. Someone walked over to the DJ and said, "You're going to have to take that off."
What?
Yes.
And so what did that make you think?
I was proud. I was proud of my colleagues for not just going along with the flow and not ignoring what the rest of the world was ignoring. They might not have been writing about it, tweeting about it, or doing broadcasts about it, but at least there was an awareness.
In the 90s, when R. Kelly was in his heyday, was his music part of your soundtrack, your coming-of-age soundtrack?
Not necessarily, though. He did have his one big hit was the song, you know, I Believe I Can Fly. That's a fantastic, wonderful song.
Yeah. You have you had a family connection to that, right?
Oh, yes, yes. My sister was living in Nashville, Tennessee at the time, and she was decorating her children's playroom, and she had created this beautiful mural, and it was a carnival scene of her daughters playing at a carnival. And up above, she'd had an artist paint a airplane, and it had her son in it, and he has special needs, severe special needs. And it was just a beautiful scene. And from the airplane, there was this banner extending out. And she said, "I've been thinking and thinking, but I cannot figure out what to write on that banner." So I'm looking at this beautiful scene with her beautiful little girls playing in the carnival scene, and up above this airplane with her little boy in it. I said, "I know what you should write. I believe I can fly." Right? "I believe I can fly." It seemed like a good idea at the time.
I'm sure it did.
I'm horrified in hindsight.
Oh, geez.
Right over her little girls.
Oh, my gosh. So, Janice, you watched Surviving R. Kelly as millions of viewers did. What was your reaction?
Saturday, late afternoon, and began with the first episode and was basically glued to my chair as episode after episode after episode came on. I'd heard about these allegations, but seeing them all at one time, hour after hour that went by, I was horrified, devastated. It was worse than I'd ever imagined, and I'd imagined pretty bad.
You got a text from a friend, right? Your friends were weighing in on
that. Yes, they were. Yes, they were. And one of my friends texted me, "You know, I'm almost in tears." She didn't tell me why, and I knew what she was feeling. That she'd no doubt been triggered. She was a rape survivor, a sexual assault survivor, someone who'd gone on done really well in her life, but watching this docuseries brought it all back.
You wrote a column after this docuseries was over about how this whole thing ignited local activism. Tell me about one of the young women you met.
Her name is Lakeisha.
My name is Lakeisha Anthony, and I am the founder of Voice. Voice is a sexual abuse survivors network.
She is a sexual abuse and a rape survivor, and she watched it all in one fell swoop like I did.
I was in full disgust.
The next morning when she woke up, she decided, I'm going to do something.
It just really set fire to me. Nobody was really hearing our voices in the way that they've heard them now.
Her pastor contacted her because he knew of her background and said, you got to do something.
So we ultimately did not get a flyer out for the event until, I think, the day before.
And together they came up with this idea to create this forum. It would be for local women. And this was an opportunity for women to come together, men too, if they wanted, to gather and to heal.
If I can see somebody who looks like me or that can relate to me or that I can relate to in some way to say that they've experienced something that I've experienced, then we can definitely overcome this because they did it.
So he continues with his career.
He does. And
he keeps having raunchy shows where he has, his shows are so raunchy. I've never been to one, but my understanding is that he has a bed on the stage. He brings women up on the stage and simulates sex acts with them. And the majority of people who go to R. Kelly shows are black women.
I can't wrap my head around that. And you know what? And who will continue to support him? I have followers and people I've seen on social media making excuses for him and saying, oh, how come they're not going after Harvey Weinstein like this? Why are they going after R. Kelly?
We should note that most of the people who are asking these questions are black women.
Yes.
And black people.
Yes.
So what do you make of that? What do you make of that?
When there's someone in the black community is perceived as being under attack, there's this knee-jerk reaction to close ranks and to say, well, what about other people?
I talked to Rutgers professor Salmanisha Tillett about the Bill Cosby trial recently.
I'm co-founder of the nonprofit A Long Walk Home, a Chicago-based organization that uses art to educate and empower young people and end violence against girls and women.
And here's what she had to say about black women who accuse powerful black men.
You have to acknowledge a real power differential. They're not equal. The truth is African-American women are still less likely to come forward than white women when the perpetrator is an African-American man. So I think that's all this stuff. It's race, class, power, celebrity, liking a figure. It's a collision of so many different discourses and representations and images. So when that stuff happens, it's still much easier to blame the victim because we're more likely to do that anyway.
So, Janice, you wrote in your column that there's a lot of shame and denial surrounding sexual assault in African-American communities. Why is that?
Why is that? That's a really good question. That's one of the many things we as black people sort of keep to ourselves. There's this old saying, you don't talk outside of your house. Like the woman I interviewed, Lakeisha, that's what she told me.
We ultimately don't share our struggles. We are a proud people.
You know, mental illness is another thing. There are lots of taboo topics and things like that. And unfortunately, when people are the victims of sexual assault or abuse, it's sort of swept under the rug.
Janice, we know that the Me Too movement was started by a black woman, Tarana Burke.
Right.
I know Tarana Burke. Mm-hmm. I knew her when she worked at Art Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And I know that when she started the Me Too movement about 10 years ago, she intended it to be a place where black women and girls who had been sexually violated could come and talk and without judgment. When Alyssa Milano, the actress Alyssa Milano, tweeted out Me Too over the Harvey Weinstein allegations. It seemed like the voices of Black women and girls were being silenced or ignored.
Completely ignored. Almost to the point that you almost forgot that Tarana Burke had anything to do with it in the first place. But, you know, a movement that was started to help Black girls and Black women became, it was almost as if it was co-opted by the Gwyneth Paltrows, the Alyssa Milano. Why? Because these were celebrities.
You've heard it, Janice. Oh, she shouldn't have wore her skirt so short. Do you think that this docuseries has sort of shifted the way we talk about rape culture in our community or in the larger community?
I really hope so, especially when we're talking about girls. They are not old enough to give consent. We're talking 14, 15-year-olds.
If you're trying to end rape, then you really have to think about what are the ways in which we almost work together to maintain the fact that, like, girls still have to grow up thinking that they could be easily raped, or women are taught that they should not wear certain things to protect themselves from being raped. That if you're really interested in ending a rape culture, the onus wouldn't be on the potential victims, but also we would have to activate our imaginations everywhere we are to really end it.
What good do you think has come out of this docuseries?
I think the best thing that has come out of the docuseries is little bits and pieces that we've always known, we've already heard, that have been rumored and talked about, have all been put together in one place. And that is something that has been hard for people to ignore. And it's also, for the first time, Black faces are a big part of the Me Too movement.
Janice, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me on.
This note, the docuseries has sparked follow-up calls for criminal investigations of R. Kelly in Chicago and Atlanta. And that's it for the show. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen. Our engineers are Mike Villers, Diana Martinez, and Al Banks. Special thanks to Ish Quintero, who created our theme music. WHYY's news director is Eugene Son. The assistant news director is Katie Colinari. Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue. John Massoni is assistant vice president of news operations. Tweet us at Shai Ben-Yaakov, Annette J.H., or Alex Ray Stern. And drop a comment wherever you download your podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back Monday.